It's a bunch of coins that were used in everyday life, in everyday circulation, rather than just a stack of coins that have come straight from the mint and been held on to and then put in the ground. And that in turn suggests that if you've got lots of different coins of Edmund and nothing from Mercia or from Wessex, these other local kingdoms in England, that Edmund is actually in charge of his own coinage and he's able to regulate that coinage. So although the Vikings are cruising around England, he's still able to maintain some level of social and economic control within East Anglia. The other interesting elements of the hoard are that you've got four silver brooches and two silver strap ends. And these wonderful little ends of belts that we call strap ends, made from silver, and they've got little animal heads on them. And in the eye sockets, they've set little glass chips so that in the light, the eyes would have glistened as though the animals were alive, which I think are wonderful little things. And the brooches, again, they're all English, and they seem to have artistic traits that suggest they are from East Anglia. So, again, the hoard tells us that you've got an East Anglian that is burying their wealth, because they're obviously worried about Vikings arriving, and for whatever reason, they're not able to recover it. And so with both of these hoards disappearing into the ground, it does remind us that these Vikings were very, very real people that were literally killing people in, as they wander around the landscape, and were causing an enormous, not just economic, but social disruption as they wander around.
But they assimilated with the...
They do assimilate, and we can see that these Vikings are settling down. And initially they bring their pagan religion with them. We've got a couple of Thor's hammers. So Thor is one of the Viking gods that has a hammer as his weapon. He uses to smite his enemies, called Mjolnir. And probably influenced by seeing Christians wearing crucifixes, the Vikings come to wear these little hammer amulets around the neck, so miniature hammers that would have been on a necklace. And we've got one from Attleborough. An interesting point there is that this site at Attleborough has produced other Viking brooches, and it suggests that here is an actual place that some Vikings settled down, and then they assimilated with the local population. And so we begin to see Anglo-Scandinavian types of jewellery, so where you can see things that have been clearly produced in England but still have elements of Scandinavian style. They're in touch with the Scandinavian homelands, just as you can see many Asian communities in England today still retaining connections with the sub-Indian continent. And it's just the same in Scandinavia. They're going back, they're bringing back the latest art styles, and then they're incorporating them in updated jewellery, which you can say is both English and Scandinavian.
Can you tell me why in East Anglia there are so many finds of this nature?
Well, one of the reasons that we produce find so many archaeological finds every year is that we have such wonderful dialogue with metal detectorists in the region. And that's something that's been built up over the last 30 years, and it's not just Norfolk, it's in Suffolk as well. And these were regions that curators at museums initially realised that they were seeing so many archaeological finds coming up through metal detecting that they really needed to be recorded, and that we needed to work with metal detectorists rather than against them. And as a result of that, in Norfolk we find and we record about 16,000 finds every year, and that's in an identification and recording service that is run by the County Council in association with the Portable Antiquities Scheme that's based at the British Museum. And of those 16,000 finds every year, Norfolk yields over 100 treasure cases. I think last year it was something like 120 treasure cases, which is about 10% of the entire total for England and Wales. So it's an enormous volume of material. Now, the first answer in a way is that we've got this many things being recorded because we work very closely with metal detectorists, and it's a fantastic and really fruitful relationship. And any metal detectorist should really record their finds with the museum services and the Portable Antiquities Scheme, because otherwise that information that they have is simply wasted. And, you know, we're not going to follow it up or take the fines away from people, but it does give information, and all of the effort that people have put into finding those things then has an ongoing life of its own. But the longer answer is, well, why is there all this material in the ground? And the short answer is that we're a rich county. Norfolk is a big area. It's predominantly agricultural, and the land is very fertile, and that means it can support more crops and therefore feed more people, and so more people can live here. And more people that live here need their clothes, and they need their belts to hold their trousers up, and so they drop buttons and brooches and strap-ins and other bits and pieces, and 1,000 years later they've come to be found by metal detectorists.
That's absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much for speaking to us.
Pleasure.
Well, I'm talking to Anna McCarthy, who is the visitor programme manager. You were involved, I understand, in the events and activities programme.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
Of course. Yeah, we're very excited here. We've got this fabulous exhibition. It's actually unusually with us here at Norwich Castle for 6 months. So it opened in February and it runs all the way through to September this year. So lots of opportunities for people to come and see the exhibition. We have exhibitions, usually three major exhibitions a year at Norwich Castle. This year is a bit different because we're planning to have a big redevelopment of our keep, so some changes to the timetable. But every time we have an exhibition, we have a brand new programme of activities to support it. The programme's intended to make sure that as many people as possible can benefit from the exhibition. So that means people from know all about the Vikings to people who don't know anything but might like to. So we develop a range of engaging opportunities for people to participate, to increase their knowledge and understanding, and mostly we hope to have an enjoyable experience of high quality here at Norwich Castle. I'll tell you about what shape and form that might take. So, for example, we have fabulous people in the castle today. We're working with City College Norwich students. We've got a beauty salon called Viking Sassoon, where people can make an appointment to come and have their Viking plaits put in place. It's proving extremely popular. So we try to make aspects of the Vikings as accessible and relatable as possible, and also to show people how we too like to make ourselves look good. We like to bathe and adorn ourselves, and the Vikings were no different. They were very keen on their bling and their statements of beauty and status, so there's lots of nice ways to make it possible for people to relate to the Vikings. Later this week we've got a day called Vikings Ahoy. We're focusing on the Vikings who are famous for their nautical skills and navigational marvels, really. I mean, they came here paddling all the way from Scandinavia using the stars to guide them, using the colour of the oceans, looking to see what sea creatures they found to tell them which bit of the sea they might be in. And as part of this programme, we've been working with Whitlingham Adventure. So you'll find on Wednesday, if you were to come in, a big dinghy in the centre of the castle. We're asking people to contrast and compare seafaring vessels and navigational techniques, what the Vikings did, how we do it now. We also have an ergo, which is a kind of a land-borne paddling machine, so you can have a go, a bit like a piece of gym equipment. So we're getting people to paddle from Scandinavia to Norfolk so they can see just how strong and resilient and powerful the Vikings would have been. And we've actually done it to scale for people here, but for everybody to have a go at how difficult it would have been just to have paddled for a kilometre. So really starting to get a sense of the amazing feat that it was for the Vikings to invade our shores. So quite immersive activities like those, where you're really becoming part of the Viking experience yourself quite physically. We've also got an array of Viking objects to touch and question and wonder about. So we, as well as being being able to bring knowledge to these exchanges, one of the things we love to do is to encourage people to wonder aloud together and say, what could it be? What might it be? What do you think? So it's a very discursive activity. We've got trails for people to find things, which is very nice for families to do together, and creating activities where people will talk to each other. So really framing them about, you know, saying, can you help each other? Let's go and find. What do you think? Let's go and look over here. Have we found it yet? So lots of things for different ages. We've got fabulous crafts to take home. We've commissioned an artist called Ali Atkins to develop the crafts. It's one of the things most people take part in. So in my opinion, it's really important that they're high quality. So we've got some great crafts which have been developed and inspired by the exhibition. And alongside that, we have really in-depth learning programmes. So whilst we're making something together, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to wonder about? What will the children, the adults, the grandparents, the carers, the tourists, what will they go away knowing? And also we want to know, what will they go away feeling? How will the exchanges in the castle make them feel about themselves? That they belong here and they were valued visitors and they'll come back. That's our aim.
This is really to enhance what people see, yes, and what they read.
Right. Absolutely.
The exhibition.
Yeah, that's right. I see it as a form of translation, really, and of interpretation. And I think often in museums, of course, we have objects and we have people. And sometimes the learning programme can start where the object is, and sometimes it can start where the person is. And I find for people who perhaps aren't accustomed to visiting museums or need to build confidence and understanding, if you start where they are, it's a really useful point. So, for example, with the hairdressing, everybody understands having your hair cut. So let's start there, and from there you can begin to understand, oh yes, Vikings did this too as well. Whereas if you started with an object, it might be harder to relate to. So shortening the distance between any object and the visitor or fact is our job, and making it something they can relate to. I think it's all about relationships. What's my relationship to these people? What relevance do they have to me? And I think in that way you make it memorable, because it does have that relationship value to you. It is relevant to you. Whereas if it's very abstract and intellectualized at times, people find it hard to attach meaning to it. Every exhibition we put a brand new set of programmes together, so I've mentioned a few. We've got performances as well. We've got Hiccup the Viking performance we've commissioned with a performance artist who's interpreted the Cressida Cow character from How to Train Your Dragon. We've also had Viking warrior fight demonstrations. We've worked with somebody called Keith Wallace, who's a fight director and choreographer. He was also in the Amazon Viking series, so he's come and explained and demonstrated how and why Vikings fought, what they used, what their techniques were. So lots of fascinating ways, hopefully providing a grasp point for all different people to begin to connect with the Vikings and who they were.
And this is a role that you enjoy?
I do, I love it. When you can see the change it makes in people. It's also about the value of participating culturally and knowing what impact cultural participation has on people's lives and the quality of people's lives generally. It's a key indicator of good life chances and life outcomes. Mm-hmm. So encouraging people to participate culturally, I think, is really important.
I was speaking to Dr. Tim Pestle, Senior Curator of Archaeology at the Norfolk Castle Museum, and Anna McCarthy, the Visitor Programme Manager.